Cairo, Seattle.
I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal, a show about famous people and the stories behind the foods they love most. Today on the program, comedian and actor Paul Reiser. Paul starred in Mad About You with Helen Hunt. He also co-created the show, he co-wrote the theme song, and he played piano on the track. And I just realized that Paul Reiser starred in My Two Dads. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but when I think back, I'm like, yeah, that was him. That was a show that made me want to change my name to Stacy, because the girl who was the star, her name was Stacy, and she looked super cool. She also looked how they described Stacy on the Babysitter's Club. But I digress. Most recently, Paul Reiser has been on Stranger Things. He created a show called Here's Johnny. And 5 years ago, Paul went back to stand-up comedy.
It felt exactly as it felt when I was 18, in that it was just as exciting and just as hard and just as fun. And there aren't that many things that you can replicate from being 18. As I got off the age, I thought, oh, yeah, there's a reason I loved doing this.
Thanks to Paul, we're going to highlight a New York City institution, Barney Greengrass, a restaurant and appetizing store on the Upper West Side. Now, we'll explain what an appetizing store is later in the show, but Barney Greengrass has been serving up scrambled eggs with sturgeon, bagels with lox, and black and white cookies in New York City since 1908. And Gary Greengrass is the third generation owner.
I always say the place is like a comfortable shoe. When sort of the city and the neighborhood and, you know, everything moves forward and changes, it's nice to come back and see something that hasn't changed.
But first, my conversation with Paul Reiser. Hello.
Hey, is this Rachel?
It is. Is this Paul?
It is indeed. How are you? Are you in Seattle as we speak?
I am. Are you in the hotel, as my phone says that you are?
Yeah, does it say that?
It does, yeah. I'm not that psychic. I only have a little bit of magic about me.
You're very good. You're very good.
Thank you. So let's just talk briefly about your childhood. Were you a funny kid? How did you get into comedy in the first place?
Was I funny? I think I was a funny kid. I kind of was drawn to comedy. I loved watching comics. I didn't know as a kid that you could do that. I didn't know that was an option. I remember being drawn to it, you know, in the same way that you, whatever it is that you like in life. So when I was in high school and I started going to clubs in the Village in New York, and I would see George Carlin before he got really big, and Robert Klein before he really broke out, and David Steinberg. And the path was, well, if you go to these clubs and you start hanging out, well, then you get on stage and then, you know, the career will happen, which is, in fact, the dumbest career plan you can have, because it doesn't work like that at all.
No.
It just happened to have worked out. So that was nice.
But once his acting career took off, Paul moved away from stand-up for decades. But now he's back to touring.
It was something that I was meant to do, and I always meant to get back to it. And it, for some reason, it took me longer than I planned. You know, there are a lot of comics who got into stand-up only so they could find, you know, hopefully get a TV show or something, and then they would abandon stand-up. And to me, that was never the goal. My goal actually was to be a stand-up, and everything else kind of accidentally worked out nicely. Getting back to it has been like the most fun thing, to be honest. There's nothing I love more than being on stage.
That's awesome. I did stand-up 3 times and then bombed on my 3rd time and never did it again. So you're a better man than me.
Well, that's enough.
It's so scary.
You know, somebody once said, and gave me a great piece of advice years ago when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and they said, if there's something else you can do, do that, and which I thought was a great test for anybody, because whatever you do, it's going to be hard. So if you don't have the drive to make it through all the hard stuff, it ain't going to work out anyway. For those of us who do stand-up, it's like, well, it wasn't like a choice. It wasn't like we could have done without it. So it felt right. And after having taken so many years off, it really was exciting. You're always learning how to do it. You never actually get it. It's like a moving target. You never quite get it exactly right. You know, for me, I always get off and think, oh, now I know what I could do better next time. There's always something to try tomorrow.
Okay, so talking about a different part of your childhood, I read on Wikipedia, which knows all, that your
dad... It's not true.
All right.
I don't know, whatever it is.
Then it is not true that your dad was a wholesale health food distributor. Is that true?
That is true.
Okay.
That is, in fact, true.
So I was curious how you ate growing up, if that infiltrated your life, if you were like the only kid in the 60s who was eating, you know, sprouted tofu and hippie food.
No. The irony of that is we were so not into health foods at all. He started it kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? He was kind of a prescient in the way, and he did not think, you know, this is going to be a big business someday. It was just something he started like in the 40s, and there was no health food world at the time. He didn't come to it because he was actually into eating well. It was just a job opportunity that came, and he started his own company. He would bring stuff home, and we would have stuff, and we had vitamins and stuff in our house that other people didn't have, but we would be eating them right after a big fatty brisket.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's like, well, here's some vitamins that'll be good for you, and maybe cut against the huge chunks of beef that you just ate.
He's like a Coke dealer who doesn't do Coke. Like he's not
exactly.
Going to eat the merchandise.
Exactly, moving
That's so
the
funny.
Merchandise.
Yeah, and you grew up in New York, so the brisket makes sense.
Exactly. So where are you from?
I am from the Bay Area, but my mother is from the Bronx and Brooklyn, and so I grew up with like a black and white cookie instead of a heart.
They ship them out from New York? Where did you get a black and white cookie in San Francisco?
We would only get that when we visited back east, but it's funny, I'm 38, and even when I was a kid, you know, you couldn't get a lot of the foods shipped back and forth, so we would mail sourdough bread to our relatives back east, which I'm sure you can get now in New York, but
can.
It's funny, it's like the world was even so much smaller 30 years ago.
But now the black and white cookie is an interesting thing because it is a sort of a regional thing. And there's something about the cookie part itself. It's black and white for people who don't know it because it's one half is chocolate icing, the other half is vanilla icing. The cookie part itself is some mysterious substance that cakes up in the roof of your mouth, sort of like peanut butter, that if you take too big a bite, you can't speak for 40 to 45 minutes because it just gums you up. We don't know what that is. And that's when you need to just gulp coffee or something, too.
It's very cakey. And I actually just got back from New York a couple days ago, and I bought some for my mom at Barney Greengrass. And they were all sticking to the roof of my mouth.
Did you get the little ones or
the big ones? They didn't have the big ones. I had to get the little ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that's very sensible of you.
So despite the fact that food is shipped all around the world and we can pretty much get whatever we want, wherever we want it, the black and white cookie has remained pretty much a New York thing. In case you're unfamiliar, a black and white cookie is a big, round, white, cakey cookie, frosted half chocolate and half vanilla, and it's either fondant or frosting. The New York Times says it's technically not really a cookie, but what they call a drop cake, something I've never heard of before. The batter is like a cake batter, but thicker with more flour, so when you plop it onto the cookie sheet, it doesn't spread out. And when the cookie bakes, they form this little dome shape. So you take it out of the oven, you let it cool, you flip it over, and you frost the flat side. So they're flat on top and rounded on the bottom. And we have learned through this podcast that the origin of many foods is debatable. A lot of people have a lot of opinions about the history of the black and white cookie. So according to a Munchies piece written by Joanne Spataro, the black and white cookie was the result of a dessert trend from the end of the 19th century. And I love this. I never think about that foods are trending, you know, in other centuries. So at this time, it was really cool to bring dark and light elements together, like a vanilla cake with layers of chocolate frosting. And this extended into design as well and architecture. So you would see, you know, black and white tiles. You would see light and dark wood floors and also in ceramics. So before this time, cookies had always been thin and crisp. But this trend of bigger, cakier cookies started to come out. So it only made sense to apply the dark and light cake trend to this new cookie. Some say the cookie was invented by Glazer's Bake Shop in New York City, which was opened in 1902 by Bavarian immigrants and just shut its doors this past summer. But Stephen Schmidt, member of the Experts Bureau of the Culinary Historians of New York, told Munchies that he doesn't think this cookie came from any cultural tradition. He thinks it was purely commercial. The bakers were capitalizing on the trends of the time. And I'm just going to tell a little story because it amused producer Aaron. But he has also met my mom, so maybe that's why. But
I love a Rachel's mom story. Buckle in, everybody.
So I was in New York a couple months ago, and I went and I got my mom some black and white cookies because she grew up with them. And we went on a trip the next week. I delivered them to her, and she admitted that she doesn't like the vanilla side of the black and white cookie. So like a four-year-old child, I watched as she ate the chocolate side totally normally, and instead of just throwing the other half away, she scraped the cookie with her teeth away from the frosting and left like a bunch of frosting powder all over the table. Ladies and gentlemen, when you're 69 years old, you can still eat like a baby.
So she never at any point attempted to remove the frosting from the cookie. She went to eat the cookie away from the frosting.
Yeah, because the vanilla frosting was so gross. Time for a little break, but when we come back, Paul Reiser shares his last meal. So let's talk about what you would want for your last meal. What is a food that's really special?
Well, it might go right there. It might go to Barney Greengrass.
Really?
Because there's a good chance that's going to be your last meal anyway. You know, just eating it could kill you. you know what? I would probably want something. If it was my last meal and my life was still going good, I would probably get something very slow and in its preparation, like Peking duck. Because that takes like 24 hours in advance, so I would want the extra day. I'd probably, you know, you wouldn't want like instant soup. You wouldn't have ramen as your last meal.
I would hope not.
So something slow, and but you know, a Barney Greengrass could do it. An onion bagel with just the right the type of lox. This is the most I've ever talked about lox, frankly, not just publicly, just in life.
Does it feel like a therapy session?
Kind of does. Kind of does.
So you live in L.A. now. Do you have nostalgic moments for these kinds of East Coast foods that you can really only get in New York?
No, I should. In fact, it's funny that you would mention Barney Greengrass because it's one of the oldest places in New York, and that's one of my meccas that I always go to whenever I'm in New York. And my kids, who were born in Los Angeles, oddly have New York accents. And,
really?
Love going to Barney Greengrass. Yeah, so that's... And it's one of the few places in the country that looks exactly as it did 70 years ago. Nothing has changed. This is
yes.
An old world, they call it appetizing, but it's really, you know, smoked fish and bagels and very dewy food.
Yeah, I was wondering why they call it appetizing, because when I go to New York, the first thing I do when I get off the plane is I go straight to Russ and Daughters. And that's the same way. It's Russ and Daughters appetizing.
I don't know. I think it came from I once read something about why it came from some sort of German word, but I don't know, because you would think all food should be appetizing. You want an appetite. There's no store that's called unappetizing, because that would not really take off.
Not very good marketing.
Nothing that would sell. But appetizing, it's an interesting word, and somebody, your next week's guest, will have to fill that in.
Well, I'll just fill that in right now. Appetizing stores started to open in New York City in the early 1900s, along with a huge population of Eastern European Jews who immigrated there. And if you keep kosher, as many of those people did, you cannot mix meat with dairy. So the deli was created to strictly sell meat, and the appetizing store only sold dairy and fish and everything that you would eat with a bagel. Pickled things, salads, spreads. According to Thrillist, there were as many appetizing shops in New York in the 1930s as there are now Starbucks and McDonald's combined. About 500 stores. Now, shed small tear, there are less than a dozen. Paul Reiser's last meal is an onion bagel with lox from Barney Greengrass. And Barney Greengrass is one of the best places in the country to have smoked fish. It is a New York institution.
Barney Greengrass.
Hi, can I speak with Gary, please?
Yeah, who's calling?
My name's Rachel Bell.
Sure, one moment.
For great gift suggestions, check out BarneyGreengrass.com, where you can peruse our full menu of specialty foods. From bagels to borscht and bialys to babka, it's all just a click away. We'll be with you momentarily.
Hi.
Hi, it's your best friend in Seattle. Gary Greengrass is the third generation owner of Barney Greengrass, and he is just the schmoozing, dad joke making character that you would want behind the counter.
My line is when people come in and they kibitz with them a little timid. I says, next time there'll be a cover charge, I tell them two borscht minimum.
Barney Greengrass was started by Gary's grandfather, Barney Greengrass, in 1908 in Harlem.
And he moved to our present location in 1929. He specialized in smoked fish, Nova Scotia, sturgeon, sable, whitefish. The store is known as Barney Greengrass, the Sturgeon King. In the old days, we'd be known as an appetizing store, which it's a term not used commonly today, But that would refer to those dairy items, the smoked fish items, cheese blintzes, and things like that.
And does that mean that it's kosher? Is that what appetizing kind of guaranteed?
No, not necessarily. If you pay the rabbi, that'll guarantee you're kosher. No, it's...
Then did the store get passed down to your dad and then to you?
Yes, so my father was in business with his father. My father's name was Mo, and then he passed it down to me. So I'm the third generation, the one that runs it into the ground.
The last of Barney Greengrass by Gary Greengrass.
Hopefully not.
Barney Greengrass is both a restaurant and a shop. So you can sit down for a plate of eggs scrambled with sturgeon and onions with a bialy on the side. And by the way, a bialy is always in the bagel category, but it's not really a bagel. There's no hole. It's flatter. It usually has caramelized onions on the top. So it's kind of more like a roll, but it's in the bagel family. You can have homemade chopped liver with rye bread or a bowl of matzo ball soup. Or you can order a smoked fish platter to go. Maybe pick up a babka on your way home from work. This is old school Ashkenazi Jewish food. There are stewed prunes on the menu. Pickled herring in cream sauce.
Our signature dish in the egg department is Nova Scotia scrambled with eggs and onions, the house specialty. If you come into the store on a weekend, at least one every other table is dining on Nova Scotia eggs and onions. Our most popular sandwich is Nova Scotia and cream peas on a bagel, in all different varieties, if it's tomato, onion, however the customer prefers to have it. Or sturgeon, which is our moniker. Classic way to have it is sturgeon on rye with a slice of onion and butter.
Ooh. It is a big deal to keep a restaurant open for more than 100 years. Restaurants are notorious for going out of business. They stayed open through the Great Depression, through both world wars, through all kinds of economic fluctuation, not to mention food trends. Food trends come and go. Taste change. The Jewish population in New York has shrunk, and this is Jewish food. And stewed prunes are not trending on Instagram. You are not seeing stewed prunes on the cover of a food magazine. Why do you think you've been able to survive while so many have closed around you?
It's not an easy business. It's a hard business. It's a labor of love, and it's a commitment. You know, it's a commitment by my father, my grandfather, and by myself to keep the quote-unquote institution going. Our strength is that we're a food store for those who demand the best. We give the people the best that money can buy. We don't cut corners, whether they're having orange juice in our restaurants, we're getting the best, sweetest oranges that are on the market. If we're making a homemade cheese blend, so using the best cheeses, and it's all made from scratch. If it's a tomato, we buy what we call repacks. So they're all hand-selected. It's not like you buy a big box of 25 pounds and some good or some bad are all mixed in. For buying the smoked fish, people don't realize that they grade fish out like they grade meat. Like you could buy meat that's prime, you could buy meat that's choice. But
and you smoke all the fish in-house?
No, we have different purveyors smoke for us. You're not allowed to smoke in Manhattan. Maybe smoke cigarettes, but not fish.
Smoke weed, not fish.
Exactly. I probably smoke weed, too. I don't know if this plays in Colorado, but I guess out there they celebrate the very high holidays.
That's right. So I coincidentally met Gary a few weeks before this interview. I was in New York City. I realized that I had never been to Barney Greengrass, which felt like a complete betrayal to my Judaism. I also have still not seen Schindler's List, but I decided out of the two that I would go to Barney Greengrass because there's bagels there. So I went in to get my mom these black and white cookies because I was going to see her the next week. And my boyfriend has this friend, hi, Ben, who used to work at Barney Greengrass. So we chatted up Gary about him. We took a photo together. And then it was kind of a little annoying that I interviewed Paul Reiser 3 weeks later and he said Barney Greengrass. And I could have done the interview in person, Paul. I don't know why I'm getting mad at Paul. Maybe because I want a bagel and I can't have one. But I was really surprised by the look of Barney Greengrass. It was very different than I imagined because I know that they attract a lot of celebrity customers. I had heard on Bon Appetit's podcast that the editor-in-chief of The New Yorker, it's his favorite place to go. He goes every weekend. So I just kind of thought it was going to be fancy. But basically, it is a deli. It has those classic rounded glass deli cases, and the walls are just shelves with products. It looks like a pantry. And then there's some old tables and chairs just in the middle of the room. But I do love the Barney Greengrass sign outside. It's these huge letters, and it's kind of like a Flintstones font. It's so good. The tables and the chairs and the wallpaper inside range from the 1930s to the 1950s. It's all original stuff, which is why it can be a popular place to film things.
If you saw the movie Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close with Tom Hanks, there was an episode of 30 Rock a couple of years ago with John Hamm, Revolutionary Road. You ever see that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? You know, that was like a period piece. They used our old dining room as sort of a 1950s Midtown restaurant. They filmed Law and Order here numerous times. If you ever see You've Got Mail, that took place here on the Upper West Side, there's a scene where you could see my dad in the background. There was Meg Ryan and Gene Stapleton having lunch. They took place here at the store here. Yeah, so we've had our share. Even on Seinfeld, they didn't film it here, but they gave us a couple of mentions. I think Elaine was sitting with her girlfriends, and they're sort of pushing her, Elaine, you got to have a baby. And she's trying to change the subject. She goes, ugh, I had a piece of whitefish at Barney Greengrass the other day. And then Jerry and George are walking in the next scene. Did Elaine tell you about that whitefish she had?
You were kind of born into this business. I don't know how it went for you, you know, if you had planned to do something else and you fell into it. Was this a choice, or would you have done something totally different if you had a choice?
Or was it Jewish guilt? Is that your question?
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of both. The way I started learning the business is before, like, one of the Jewish holidays, which is very busy here. It's before Yom Kippur. So people that are not necessarily observant all year round. It's one of the holiday that most Jewish people observe, and they fast on that day, and they break fast. The biggest item that people buy is smoked fish. Not just myself, any competitor or anyone in this business is selling a load of smoked fish on that day. So back in the day, my mother and my father as well would be cutting and working late at night, and I would come in and help, and from there, learning how to slice fish, and eventually went to school, went to college. But then as I was graduating, you know, felt something inside of me that just said that this was something special. And I try to put my twist onto it. Like, for example, we used to, I built up our mail order business, so we ship all over the United States. We have an online store as well.
How long have you worked there at this point?
Over 30 years.
Is there somebody lined up to take over after you?
I don't know. We got a ways to go. I do have a son. He's 12 years old, so we have to wait till after his bar mitzvah when he realizes he's not going to play in the NBA but might own a team in the NBA, and then maybe he'll want to come into this business. The other B, not bagels, but basketball.
The two B's of his life. So is this food just in your blood? I mean, you know, people who work in a restaurant tend to eat that food all the time. Is this something you get tired of, or do you still love it all?
I do love it all the time. I guess it's not in my blood. It's more on my hips and on my right tire. But when I was a kid, there was one thing that my dad did do for me. He used to make my lunch every day for school, but he had to make two sandwiches, one for me and one for my friends. Everybody wanted a bite of my lunch. So I had to bring two sandwiches to school every day.
What kind of sandwich would you get?
Oh, it varied up. Nova Scotia and cream cheese on a bagel, whitefish and Novi, cream cheese on a bagel. It was popular. That got me points with the kids.
Paul Reiser wants his last meal to be a bagel with lox from Barney Greengrass. Do you know Paul well?
I do know Paul. He's a great guy. Know him for a long time. Listen, he's a real gentleman. I mean, his mother used to shop in here. She loved her pumpernickel bread. But she was, you know, she's just a really wonderful person.
And how many years has he been coming in?
Oh, I don't even know. Could be 25 years, 30 years. You know, when we both had hair on our heads.
Those were the days.
I mean, he comes in with his family, sometimes with his friends. He loves smoked salmon. He loves whitefish, loves bialys. So a cute story, if you're familiar, he had his show Mad About You for many years. So there's a role player. His name was, you know, John Pankow, who played Cousin Ira on the show. He was on there for many years. But before he got his sort of steady role, he actually lives in this neighborhood. And he told me, oh, I'm going out, you know, I have a guest appearance on Mad About You. I says, oh, you're going to Mad About You. I says, you got to bring Paul. If you want to get the job, I says, you bring him whitefish, Nova, bialys, and you'll be in. Sure enough, he schlepped it out to California, brought it to Paul. It's all history. I think he was on the show for at least 3 or 4 years.
That's because bagels are magic. Okay, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, some last words from Paul Reiser. Not like he's going to die. Just last words on this podcast. Paul Reiser loves food, but he's not a foodie. He's not a big food risk taker. He's not a cook, but he likes what he likes.
Here's what I've learned in my years, that sometimes the most fascinating food is the simplest. The first time my wife and I went to Italy, And everyone said, oh, you know, the food is great. And you had the pasta and all these great rich foods. And we were in Tuscany, and we were like just stopped at like a corner grocery store just like for a snack. And we saw these tomatoes that were the brightest, reddest tomatoes. We said, well, we just got to have them. And we took the tomatoes, and we sat on the steps of this, and we ate it, bit into this tomato, and we both went, what is that? That's like the greatest thing I've ever had, because apparently tomatoes, what in America, they're just been pasteurized or chemicalized or whatever. They're not what a tomato was meant to be. But if you go to Italy, and you go into an untreated actual tomato, it'll make your head explode. It's that good. So I can, if I had to list off some of the best things I've ever eaten, they were great because they were so simple. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thank you so much, Paul. It was so nice to talk with you, and I hope you enjoy your time in New York.
If you want me to bring you anything, let me know. You need more black and white cookies. Make sure you get to me before, like, next week.
You know what I need? Because it was the one thing that I forgot, and we ate so much that I don't think there's any pizza left in New York, but I forgot to buy a box of devil dogs.
See, now, I was never a devil dog fan because the devil dogs did not have icing.
Uh-huh.
They were a little too cakey for my taste. And they had a chemical smell that somehow if the icing concealed. So it was the same stuff. So I enjoyed a ring-ding, which was like a hockey puck with chocolate cake and then icing and then cream in the middle. But the devil dog, I always felt, was the loser of the group. I don't respect you any less, but I think you did better with the black and white cookie. It shows a sophistication that I admire. Yodels were the small sort of log-shaped ones. And then some reason, I don't know why, maybe just to keep them, we froze them. And then we realized we stumbled onto something because a frozen yodel has that extra crispy, crunchy, cool to it. That will knock your socks off. If you have an ice box, if you have a freezer and a yodel, I would suggest you try that.
I feel like I just heard a commercial for yodels. Like you did a lot of alliteration. That was
you
really
did.
Was
and
crispy,
you think
crunchy,
I'd get a free
cool.
box or something from them, but no. Thanks so much. And if you come down to the show, come say hello.
I will. I'll give you
a special hug.
A special hug, exactly. A non-inappropriate hug.
Entirely appropriate.
That's
hug.
Right. Full frontal, though. All arms wrapped around.
Hey.
Not one of those weird bro hugs.
No. We'll commit.
Okay. Bye, Paul.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And that was Paul Reiser's last meal. Thanks to Paul Reiser for being on the show. He has stand-up shows booked all over the U.S. starting back in 2019, so go check it out at paulreiser.com. There are show dates. He has all his books up there if you want to buy one, and you can see his latest TV and movie projects. Thanks to Gary Greengrass. Make sure to pop in if you're in New York. Gary will probably be there, and he will make a dad joke that you may not get, but you'll just laugh anyway because Gary is very charming. You can order smoked fish from Barney Greengrass if you're not in the area at barneygreengrass.com.
What would my last meal be? My last meal would be probably whitefish and anchovy with vegetable cream cheese, tomato and onion on a toasted bialy. There you go.
This episode was produced by Aaron Mason and me. Theme music, as always, by Prom Queen. And make sure and follow along on Instagram. We're kind of new. I think I've been on Instagram now for like 5 months. I'm an Instagram baby. Follow along at Your Last Meal Podcast. That's where you can send me a message if you want to share what your last meal is or if you have a comment or a question. And if you can spare a second, just give us a quick rating on Apple Podcasts. Just giving it 5 stars or writing a little review makes a big difference. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal.